Well, thanks very much to Lenore Ely for inviting me here, and thanks to Lee Edwards for teeing things up so eloquently at the beginning of this panel. And thanks to all of you as well for sticking this out until the cheerful end, as Gleaves has kicked us off on here. Gleaves has spoken very eloquently to the revolutionary changes that we're seeing in technology and even the very life of the mind on both the left and the right, as we've seen with the movement inspired by Donald Trump and as we've seen with the Bernie Sanders movement among Democrats and on the left. Yet I find myself agreeing with Lee Edwards that when I look at the hard facts of this election, it does not look like a realignment is taking place in party politics as yet. States that were Democratic in the last two election cycles still look set to be Democratic this time as well. The major exception at the moment seems to be Iowa, which had been a state that went for Barack Obama twice and is now looks like it's going to go into Donald Trump's column this November. Most states that have been Republican in recent cycles are primed to remain Republican. And the battlegrounds this year are much the same as they have been for the past decade: Ohio, Florida, and Republicans hope, Pennsylvania. Now, Donald Trump is obviously an unusual nominee, and his personal unpopularity may cause some typically Republican states to move into the Democratic column. But I would not really bet on it. And if that does happen, I would not take it as a sign of political realignment or partisan realignment happening, but rather simply as an indication of a particular candidate's weaknesses. All of this, however, is not to say that there is not a realignment over the horizon. In fact, we can see the outline of profound change already emerging just from looking back at the past few elections. The outline of the coming realignment is in fact seen in places like Virginia and North Carolina. Republicans have been looking at the electoral map since 2004 in the wrong way. Now, you may remember this. In 2004, after George W. Bush's re-election, there was a map that went around that was very popular among conservatives. And it basically showed the whole country, huge swaths of which were in red, and only tiny dots of which were in blue. And that seemed to suggest that the country was overwhelmingly Republican and perhaps conservative as well, despite the fact that the actual margin of victory for Bush was nothing near as large as the margin of victory for, say, Ronald Reagan in 1984 or even George H.W. Bush in 1988. Republicans looked at that map and they thought about states and they thought about geographic areas. A friend of mine recently remarked when he was looking for a silver lining should Trump lose in a landslide this year that really there's not one Republican but 50, one Republican party, but rather 50 Republican parties. That's true, but as the historian John Lucas liked to say, it's not true enough. The things that matter in our politics are not just the 50 states, but some 500 or more cities. And as we've seen, blue cities will turn red states purple and ultimately blue. This has already happened in Virginia, where the growth of Northern Virginia, which is a cultural colony and an outgrowth of Washington, D.C., has flipped the state from Republican to Democratic. That happened in the last two elections, and it looks pretty firmly in Hillary Clinton's column right now. In North Carolina, we've seen that cities rich with high-tech jobs and universities have been weakening the GOP's hold on that state in presidential elections. The formerly solid South for the GOP is cracking up because the cities, the population centers, are aligning away from the rest of the states. And you can see this change as well in the dog that isn't barking, in the realignment that is not taking place. Donald Trump, based on the polls right now, looks like he will probably lose Pennsylvania this year, despite his appeal to blue-collar workers. Why is that happening? Republicans have targeted Pennsylvania since 2000, yet they, again and again, they lose it despite having hopes of winning. Why? Well, it's because in large part of this city, which represents such a large proportion of the state's vote that it swamps the rest of the state of Pennsylvania. Cities keep blue states blue. They are turning red states purple and finally blue. And cities are moving toward Democrats even in the deepest of red states, even in Texas. So not only Austin, of course, but also Houston, San Antonio, and Dallas all have Democratic mayors. So the Democrats have hoped for a very long time that they're going to demographically turn Texas blue. That's still quite a ways off, but I think you see the beginnings of a realignment in the fact that Democrats are now winning in urban Texas. Now, the kind of conservatism... American politics is always about geography, not just about race and ethnicity, as the left would often like to believe. It's not just about identity, it's about where you live. States will realign if population centers realign. And if the GOP is going to survive as a national party, it will have to become an urban party once again, a party not just of states, but of cities. Now, obviously, the kind of conservatism that prevails in cities is quite different from what one finds in less urban areas. City politics is granular, which means it's less open in some ways to the kind of programmatic solutions that conservatives have liked to pioneer over the last 30 years or so. Urban politics is less amenable to Christian conservative social policy. Cutting government is not always the conservative or right-wing answer to urban problems. Crime in particular, for example, tends to split apart coalitions of conservatives and libertarians. Some of the policy and cultural debates that are framed, typically in the national media, in terms of demographics, about immigration, about the growing demographic strength of non-Christian and non-white voting blocs, are really equally well-framed as urban versus non-urban questions. Now, cities are culturally cosmopolitan almost by definition. They have their own moralities. You may recall that Ted Cruz referred to New York values during the Republican primaries. And those moralities are different from those of other less urban regions. That does not mean, however, that they can't have their own form of conservatism and that their form of conservatism can't appeal to other parts of the country. So Donald Trump was actually very successful, even though he does embody some of the New York values that Cruz was criticizing. He nonetheless has been a very successful candidate, or was in the Republican primaries, in less urban parts of the country as well. The different settings, the different social pressures and conditions, and even the simply the greater population density, all of these things make cities incubators of a different way of life and a different way of looking at the relationship of government to the public. So basically, you know, I think there's going to be a realignment taking place where cities are driving states towards the Democrats. If conservatives and Republicans wish to counter that, they're going to have to start thinking again about how to make their ideas palatable and functional within urban environments. Now, it's not necessarily always the case that cities are growing relative to suburbs and the countryside, but between the growth of many cities and the polarization that we're seeing in urban areas, we're definitely seeing cities become an engine of the Democratic Party and sort of progressive movement. Now, even beyond the urban question, Republicans are very concerned about demographics. They think they are demographically doomed with immigration and an increasingly progressive youth culture among millennials. They are, however, hopeful that they can still hold on to the House because the House of Representatives is not yet plebiscitary in its assignment of seats. Land, in effect, still has a vote in the House, and it votes Republican. Now, conceivably, states with Republican legislatures, but which vote Democratic in presidential elections, could be restored to the Republican column in presidential elections by making the presidential vote look more like the House vote. That is, by awarding presidential electors according to House districts, or by using other formulas to end the present winner-take-all delegate selection process, electoral selection process, in most states. Right now, Maine and Nebraska are two exceptions to the winner-take-all rule. Now, this move, this practical change, could stave off the effects of demographic adjustments within the country, but only temporarily. And the result of creating a situation in which Republican presidents are frequently elected with a minority share of the popular vote would certainly pose legitimacy problems. Already, the fact that more individuals, more citizens, vote for Democrats than for Republicans as their House representatives is a source of long-term weakness for the GOP. And this is something that Democrats have crowed about a little bit, but which hasn't really sunk in to many Republicans. Even in the 2014 midterm elections, when Republicans did extremely well and won a greater share of House votes than they had in modern times, Democrats still actually received more votes overall for the House. That's a warning sign. That means that something, an earthquake, is impending sooner or later. To push the advantage that Republicans have in the House and to apply it to the presidency as well would risk a backlash that could lead to reapportionment of House seats by population. Now, that might be attempted through nonpartisan mechanisms, but even such nonpartisan mechanisms, scrupulous however they may be, would inevitably tend to improve Democrats' numbers, again, simply because more people have been voting for the Democrats. So sooner or later, to win not only the presidency, but even to keep the House, requires winning the votes of more individuals. And that means winning the votes of population centers where individuals actually live. Now, what are the prospects for Republicans and for conservatives to change the nature of cities and to get cities to become more conservative and to have an effect on electoral politics as a result? The fear here might be that conservatives would have to give up all the things that they currently believe in, that they would have to become certainly much more culturally progressive in order to appeal to urban areas. Now, people make the case for that, and perhaps there is some truth to it. But it seems to me there are many areas, and in fact they're being investigated by a number of good conservative organizations, where conservative ideas already exist that can appeal to urban settings. So, for example, we at the American Conservative Magazine have had a project for the last 2 years looking at the concept of new urbanism, which has to do with the design of cities and applying traditional design elements, whether it's walkability, whether it's the way architecture is created, to present-day 21st century cities. That's very popular. I've been astonished by the amount of interest that this has generated among conservatives, among libertarians, among people who never thought of themselves as having a political orientation, but who've been brought over to the conservative side by this interest in new urbanism. I think also you can see in fields like high culture, an area where conservatives can start to win over cities. So think of something like the New Criterion, for example, a journal of high culture. It is, in effect, dealing primarily with New York high culture. It seems to me that there could be journals like that in many other places. There should also be policy journals that are not just focused on sort of state-level or national issues, but that have more of an urban and local focus. You already have things like the Manhattan Institute and its publication City Journal, which do tremendous work. I think also the Rockford Institute and Chronicles Magazine deserve some credit here because they, too, have some focus on Rockford, Illinois itself. There are many more opportunities here. You've seen over the past few decades the creation of conservative think tanks, libertarian think tanks, free market think tanks in all of the 50 states. Well, now we need to have think tanks within 500 cities. Now, if Republicans are not going to adopt this more urbanistic approach, they're going to lose ground not only to Democrats, but perhaps also to independents. I think there is a market niche here that will be filled sooner or later by someone. And if Republicans do not take the initiative, they're going to be very surprised at where they find themselves. Already, in a place like New York, you've seen this somewhat, where a Republican Party that had been able to elect Rudy Giuliani two decades ago has been steadily slipping. So you went from Giuliani, a Republican, to Bloomberg, who was quasi-Republican at one point and then a full independent, finally now to Bill de Blasio, who's a Democrat. All across the country, you are seeing these kinds of developments. And I think this, for all that it is less sort of spectacular than what we see right now in the presidential election with Trump and Hillary Clinton, that in fact these changes at the local level and at the city level are the things that are going to drive a realignment in the 21st century.